Hi, this is Frank Clementi. Welcome to the Green Roundtable. David Isaac is not able to make it today, but he's here in spirit, right?
Absolutely. Always in spirit.
Okay. Today, we have our co-host, Eric Kost, architect and general contractor.
Hey, Frank, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
It is great. Good to be back at the Green Roundtable. Where is Dave right now?
Well, you know, the last time I talked to him, he was on an aircraft.
Aha.
So he was flying one of these commercial airliners, and he should be here, well, maybe a little later.
Now, he wasn't flying it, was he? He was just actually on the plane, I hope.
Yes, that's right. He was on the plane. Our guest, our special guest, is Greg Peterson. And he was the founder of the Phoenix Permaculture Guild. Greg, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. I know you founded this organization, but now you're launching something really fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, I live at a place called the Urban Farm. And the Valley Permaculture Alliance, as it's now called, used to be the Phoenix Permaculture Guild. And they're doing great work out there and teaching people how to live green and plant trees and like that. And the place where I live is really what's going on. It's called the Urban Farm. It's in north central Phoenix. And about 6 months ago, I launched a program that I call 10,000 Urban Farms in Phoenix.
And so you expect to see a lot of farms around town.
I do. And you know what? I'll bet you if we count them out there, there's a couple 3,000 out there already.
Oh, I think at least. Everywhere I go, I meet more and more people that are starting to grow their own veggies and get into this idea.
Yeah. Well, and here's the exciting, simple thing. Here's what it takes to become an urban farmer.
What does it take?
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, I got to write this down.
All right. Ready? So grow your own food. Share it with somebody. And I think the most important piece is to name your farm.
Fabulous idea. You name your farm, and so you connect with it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. You're connecting with it.
Yes.
But also the people out there that kind of interact with you, your neighbors, they'll connect with it as well. And, you know, often they're fun names. Like my friend Laura has her farm name is Wish We Had Acres.
Wow.
You know, and she lives right in the middle of Phoenix. So,
right.
You know, and then there's the urban farm. And I had somebody at a recent tour, they said their farm name was Jack's Beanstalk.
That is a good one. Yeah. You know, the urban farm sounds so cool when I first heard it. Now I'm actually a little disappointed in your farm name. It seems a little too easy.
There you go.
Too practical, huh?
Yeah.
So this whole notion of being an urban farmer, it's really to get people rooted, pun intended, rooted in growing their own food and sharing it with somebody. Because in the sharing, it's where the community happens.
Mm-hmm. So it's a great way to connect with people and bring people into a different relationship that maybe you don't have in other ways.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, because when you have a party, where do people end up?
In the kitchen,
of course.
But now they'll wind up in the garden.
There you go. And they do that, too, when they come to parties at the urban farm.
There you go.
Well, and it's true, though, because it's, at least for me, I've started my own little garden we talk about on the show every once in a while. Uh-huh. So I've only had it a little over a year.
Uh-huh.
This is our second actual season of planting.
Yay. What'd you get the first time?
Not much.
That's all right. It's a start.
Well, we got some tomatoes. We got some peppers, some things like that, some carrots and beets. We opened a whole new world of beets for us. But what was neat is, you know, you have certain friends that come to your house all the time. Uh-huh. You have other friends that maybe are only at your house once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
But what you find is, at least for us, when we did that garden, every time somebody came to our house that hadn't been to the garden, that's where we took them. That's what we started talking about. Because it's just a neat, interesting, real thing that you can gravitate to.
Exactly. Plus you're planting seeds.
Oh boy, planting seeds.
Metaphorically and literally.
Yes, I didn't even think about it.
But and that's the important thing. That's, you know, you get your garden planted and then share it with people. I open up the urban farm for tours and classes, and on any given Saturday, people come by and literally I'll have 200 or 300 people come by.
Wow.
On a Saturday.
Right.
You know, in season, and the people are interested. They really want to know.
It's a tremendous growth in farming and appreciation of having real food.
Yeah, that's the important piece.
Greg, have you heard of the Three Sisters?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Three Sisters is corn, beans, and squash.
Now, why are they sisters?
Well, that's a great question. So the whole notion of a Three Sisters garden is they get planted together.
Yes.
And it becomes a symbiotic relationship. The beans are fixing nitrogen that the corn needs. The corn provides shade for the squash. And, you know, you're getting this whole ecosystem going on in your garden that then, you know, then it really.
So they're companion plants and exactly. They support each other.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Greg, I know that you're interested in, tell us a little bit about how you feel that having Urban Farm, what is it going to do for people? And maybe you might talk a little bit about health and some of the benefits that come from having a farm, other than what we've already talked about.
Yeah, how many hours we have?
Well, we've probably got about five or six.
There you go. You know, there's two significant pieces when we start talking about the health. The health of growing your own garden. First of all, there's that connection to Mother Nature. We're getting out there. We're getting our hands in the dirt. We're reconnecting. And for me, that becomes a meditation. I go out into the garden most every morning, and, you know, I'm at least feeding the chickens and doing some watering and picking the fruit and vegetables. And, you know, really that's a connection for me. So that's a peaceful place. The second one, and this is probably one of the more obvious ones, and that's the notion of we're growing healthy food. If you're growing food in your garden, you know exactly what you're putting on it.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And right. There are no chemicals or toxins involved, you
exactly.
know, unless you spray it, you know, with toxic materials.
Right.
But otherwise, you have more control out of what you're eating. And
exactly.
also it becomes an educational tool, doesn't it?
That's
Greg?
Right. Like you said, when, you know, people come by, they want to see your garden.
Well, when you think about control, you know, my sister just got back from Germany. And we all just heard about what happened in Germany with the bean sprouts and the E. coli and, you know, how that's – where is your food coming from? How is it being processed? And, you know, this
– Well, and the interesting thing about that stuff is you notice whenever we have a scare like that, it's in the industrial agriculture arena.
Yeah.
It's not in home gardens. You know, we don't see this stuff coming out of home gardens because industrial agriculture is on a mass scale. And, you know, my garden, the garden at the urban farm, I have about 75 fruit trees on the property.
Wow.
They're all small. Most of them aren't over 6 feet. And at any given moment, there's 30, 50, 60, 70 different kinds of things to grow in the yard. I get that question a lot. People ask me, they say, you know, what do you do with all the extra food that you have? Well, I don't have a lot of extra because I've designed the space so that there's just enough of any, you know, at any given moment to make an omelet or salad or soup or, you know, something out of the yard. So I'm, you know, pulling the different pieces.
So you can actually plan a garden and an orchard in such a way so that it feeds you a certain menu that you might have in mind throughout the year or summer, winter, or whatever.
Absolutely.
Because you can grow food here year-round. A lot of people, when I've worked with in landscape design and gardens design, they wonder, well, can you grow this? Can you grow that?
Right.
But and then they're surprised to find out, my gosh, look at all the things that
you can
grow
here. Yeah. I have actually on urbanfarm.org. There is a free planting calendar that you can download. It's been developed over the past 15 years with a friend of mine, Matt Sir, and I. And you just go to urbanfarm.org and put your email address in and download it.
I downloaded it today because
did you?
I'm
thank
great
you.
Need of help, and I actually sent it off to a couple clients of mine who
perfect.
who are interested in this. And we have a project where we're doing a LEED certified home, and we're trying to do a lot of things. You know, trying to make it as green as we can for this particular project, and this particular client is really interested in that. And he's always tweaking and sort of turning his garden, so I'm hoping he can use that list.
Perfect.
Because we're all, you know, what do most people do? They go into their local Home Depot or their local garden center, and, you know, what have they provided or what's sitting out at that time?
Right.
That's what they go and they take home. And you get this list, and you can really start to say, okay, you know, I don't have to just grow that tomato and that pepper I get at Home Depot. There's a million other things I can grow, and I just have to get the seeds or find it.
Exactly. And there's some problems with, you know, buying at some of the nurseries around town because they're selling you stuff that's not in season. Like
yes,
in the
that's
springtime,
right.
You know, you can actually go buy broccoli in the spring. It's a lot of the nurseries around town that don't plant broccoli in the spring. You plant broccoli in September, October, November.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, 90% of the people in the Valley rely on that local nursery for what they've got, thinking, right. Well, hold on, seedlings here.
Yeah, and mostly the local nurseries, mm-hmm. you know, the Harpers, the Bakers, the Barrage, those guys, the local nurseries know what they're talking about. It's the more corporate places that, this is what corporate sent us, so... You have to just be real careful, and that's where the planting calendar comes in real nicely. You know, just go to urbanfarm.org, download the planting calendar. It's free, and it'll tell you what to plant when, because we can grow all year round.
Yeah, we can. So. Greg, tell us a little bit about the steps to start a garden.
All right. Well, I want to actually step back from that.
You
want
to step back from that one?
Yeah, because you asked about health, and
there were
three pieces to the health,
and
we only covered two of them.
Okay, let's go to the third.
The third one, and that's the health of the planet. Because this whole notion of growing and shipping food, okay, is significantly impactful on the planet.
It certainly is.
From the notion of shipping and the petrochemical products that it takes to get them from here and there. In fact, most of our food travels on average 1,500 miles. Those are called food miles. So when you look at the food coming out of your yard or my yard, it's more like feet.
Right.
The squash goes 50, 60 feet, and that creates a significant environmental change. So,
and also, last word here for our break is they put gas in order, the containers have gas in order to preserve the food.
Yes, that's not gasoline.
No, not gasoline.
Right, they use
a preserving gas.
Right, exactly. So.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911. The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Welcome back to the Green Roundtable with Greg Peterson and Eric Kost. Greg, you had a few comments.
Oh, well, you asked me, jump-starting your garden.
Right.
Or your urban farms. The steps. You know what? Make it as simple as possible.
What about soil?
Yeah.
I mean, what are some of the things that they, sort of like a laundry list or something?
Right. You actually know this, and what I'm going to say is, from a permaculture perspective, it really depends. And I like to say permaculture is the art and science of working with nature. So it's really specific to your site. You need something to grow something in. So pots are good.
Raised beds,
preferably not in the desert. However, if that's your only choice, then
go
for it.
I'm a raised bed freak.
Are you? Okay, good. Perfect. especially if you got a friend of mine lives up near Desert Ridge, and she has a gravel backyard. Uh-huh. You know, we're not going to plant in the gravel.
Right.
Right.
No.
So what we did is, and in fact, this video is on urbanfarm.org as well. What we did is we just built a raised bed, okay, out of 2x12s. So two inches wide, 12 feet long, cut one of them in half, and made boxes that were 6x12 feet long.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. And then filled them with really great soil. Okay,
yes.
You
got to
be really careful on the soil.
Mm-hmm.
I've found the best soil I've found in town is a company called GrowWell, and it's their premium potting soil. It's a little bit more expensive. It's about $32 a cubic yard if you're picking it up by the truck. I've seen it bagged at local nurseries.
Now, is that the same company when we're doing actually new and renovation construction? We recycle our drywall to a company called GrowWell. And I know they use gypsum in fertilizer.
Probably.
I'm just wondering if that's the same company.
Probably.
That'd be pretty interesting.
Probably. It's Western Organics and GrowWell. They go by that name,
okay.
The same name. So they've been really great. In fact, we did a community garden, it's really a community farm at 1010 West Adams. That's the Arizona Operating Project. It's a homeless retraining center, and we built a community garden there about 10 days ago.
Nice.
With raised beds, and they donated 30 yards of this premium potting soil. That's like $900 worth of the product. Yeah, it was crazy. And
now, what's
and
your
wonderful.
Main issue with raised beds? Is it soil temperature or moisture?
Exactly. It's soil temperature and moisture. You start raising the beds in the desert, you know, you have to stay more on top of the water you're watering to make sure that mm-hmm. they stay watered and, you know, so.
But it sure keeps the rabbits out.
It does. Well, that it does.
Yes,
that it does. And if you do go down, see, the reason I like going down rather than up is that they become basins for collecting rainwater.
Right.
So.
Yeah. The other thing I'm doing is I'm doing vertical gardening. And gardening is where you have a panel that's 6 feet tall, you know, and the water comes in from the top and it filters down. And so you just go straight forward and you pick it right off. You know, it could be an herb garden. So I think there's different ways.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
there's plus and minuses for all these things.
Absolutely.
Right. Everybody's site's different. Everybody's lifestyle's a little different. So you got to kind of tweak it in there for all that.
That's where, you know, I said a moment ago, it depends. That's where it depends
at. That's a depends part.
That's a depends part. And you know what? Here's what I tell people about gardening in the desert or farming in the desert. It's one great big grand experiment.
There you go.
Jump in. You know, and I, you know, people will tell me, you know what? I have two black thumbs. I kill everything. I said, I promise you that I've killed more than you have. I promise you. It's, you know, that's how we learn.
But what you kill is you use it as compost.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I have a clip here, comments by Dr. Doris Rapp. Dr. Doris Rapp has been very concerned with proper nutrition.
She's great.
For mothers to be and for kids.
Yeah, she is.
And we're going to play that here in the next second or so.
You got to try to buy organic food if you can. And I say that there are a number of things you can do if you're saying to yourself, oh, I can't afford organic food. Okay, let me tell you what to do. Grow your own garden.
There you go.
Frank, you've talked to them.
I love that.
Tell them how to grow a garden on their patio.
Absolutely.
But don't tell me you can't grow a garden. And I'm sure Frank would give you details and a lecture and tell you, and a printed sheet and tell you how you can do it.
Well, I'm getting a wide-brimmed sombrero, and I'm going to grow my garden on top.
There you go. There you go.
Yay!
So back to your question about starting your own, you know, starting your own. Get a pot. Put it on your porch. Grow herbs. Here's what I tell people about your first garden. The most expensive thing to buy in the grocery store and the easiest thing to grow is herbs.
Yes.
Basil, oregano, mm-hmm. Cilantro,
thyme,
parsley,
thyme. And that is where everybody starts.
That's right.
You know?
So
yeah.
It's a great starting garden, right?
That's right. Exactly. And you can do that on a pot. You know, in a pot, I'm sorry. You can do it. You just give yourself a small pot.
In a container.
In a container.
Yeah. And, okay, so you have raised beds, you have containers, we have vertical gardens.
Yeah.
And we have roof gardens.
Roof gardens. Well, all right. So it is the desert. It is the desert. And I've actually grown things on roofs here, and I highly recommend that you not grow things on roofs. They just cook. You know.
So you're saying something, Greg, that there's a need for afternoon shade or shade when you're growing.
Exactly. You know what? The best gardens you grow.
It's another one of the steps. Make sure you have some shade.
Make sure you have some shade. Yeah, the best gardens grow on the east side or the south side of a structure so that in the afternoon and evening, they're in the shade.
And ask me where my garden is.
Where's your garden?
It's on this outside.
It's on the west side of the house.
Oh, yes. Okay.
But yeah, that was one of those depends things where sometimes you only have a certain area. Now, luckily for us, we have about a 40-foot tall Palo Verde tree. It's about the biggest Palo Verde I've ever seen.
Perfect.
And, yeah, so we're getting a decent amount of shade from that.
That's right.
During the winter, we almost didn't have quite enough sun.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're doing okay in the summer. But, again,
yeah, you will.
You know, every time we're doing them, at least in the projects that I work on, it's like you said, we're almost always doing it on either the east or the southeast corner of the house.
Now, here's the other thing. If I had a choice between west and north,
well, there you go.
I'll take west because I can manage the shade on the west.
Right.
On the north side of a structure, on a wall, you don't get any sun.
Right. Lots of sun's better than no sun.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
You're saying, you're qualifying your statement, north side of a wall.
Right.
That's different than 20 feet from the wall.
Exactly.
And we're talking about microclimates.
Exactly. Microclimates. And what are microclimates?
Microclimates are unique climates to specific areas within your lot, within your property.
Exactly.
And a tree creates a microclimate underneath it.
And that's exactly what we're using.
So you use a tree. And also, when you plant a garden, you can have the plants themselves can create a microclimate within the garden itself. In other words, you know, say, for instance, you have corn, you know, that creates some kind of a climate for the plants below it.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're providing your own shade.
You're providing your own shade and your own plants provide the shade. And so it works great. Now, what about bugs? What about beneficial insects?
Well, here's the thing about insects in general. Mm-hmm. I've been organic at the Urban Farm, and you wanted to know what the Urban Farm was. We can talk about that in a minute. But I've been organic at the Urban Farm for 22 years. Now, since I moved in, and I don't have a bug problem. And I don't have a bug problem because things are in balance in my yard. We have bug problems when things get out of balance. And we also have bug problems when we don't have healthy soil. Right? So our job, really our job as farmers and gardeners here in the desert is to create healthy soil. And it's a bit of a process, but, you know, creating healthy soil is straightforward and you just do it. So.
In terms of composting, then, you're taking everything on your farm and you're composting it on your site.
That is not a correct statement.
Okay.
I take a lot of what comes off my property and compost it on my site. You know, I've got some big trees that get pruned and they provide me with, you know, stacks and stacks of branches that that I don't really have anything I can do with.
Right.
You know, I can get a chip or mulcher, but the amount of work that it would take to chip and mulch some of that stuff is it's a lot of work. So actually what I've done over the past 15 years is I only have three large trees on my property. Okay? The rest of them are small trees, all of which I can take the prunings off of and use.
Gotcha.
The big trees I can't. So as best as I can, I use the organic material that's on the property.
Because I know that's something I hear from people a lot in terms of what can I do with all of my food waste in terms of maybe I've got a small garden or a small area and I just don't have maybe the facilities or to process all these things.
Right.
What can your average person do that lives on a lot in Phoenix that's a you know an eighth of an acre with an alley behind it and they've only got you know a family of six, they're producing all of this vegetative waste.
Right.
Where does it go?
So here's the deal. Most properties don't produce enough waste, green waste, to actually compost. Okay? Because to get into the composting process is a challenge. Okay? It's a whole process. You got to mix greens and browns and it needs to get up to 152 degrees. And when it gets up to 152 degrees, it just goes on and on and on. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. So here's what I tell people to do. Get some chickens. Uh-huh. I feed all of my kitchen scraps to the chickens. Okay, if that doesn't work, okay, sometimes that doesn't work. I understand that. Get some worms. You can have a worm bucket out back. And worms make worm castings. And worm castings are absolutely flat out the best thing you can put in your garden, that next to bat guano. Okay, so, that's a couple of solutions. There's also this notion, and you know this one about sheet mulching.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to talk about sheet mulching?
No. Go ahead.
All right. Perfect. So sheet mulching is this process by which it's like lasagna gardening. There's some books out there.
Yeah, lasagna gardening concept.
Yeah, where you take a layer of dried stuff. Okay, leaves, sticks, leftover vegetative plants. Put a little bit of
no meat.
Right. No meat.
No meat. And no oils.
Right. But so like leaves and stuff. And okay. I actually use alfalfa hay as well. So you just put a fluff of about a 6-inch layer of that down. And then I get some bags of composted manure, okay, and put a bag on that. So it just adds enough manure to start the breakdown process.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put another layer down and a little bit more manure and another layer and a little bit more manure. And you can actually go 18 to 36 inches thick with this. Okay. It really is a simple process. And then what happens over the course of the next 3 or 4 months is it breaks down into a nice layer of soil. And the biggest bonus from that is that you don't have to dig.
Right.
It nurtures the lazy gardener in us. So, and then with your kitchen scraps on that, once you do the sheet mulching, you just go out in your yard and you take your kitchen scraps and put a, you know, lift up a corner of it and put it in.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot of people doing that sort of maybe not necessarily out in the desert, but people that don't really get into or have the facilities for composting, doing this just that, taking little bits of, you know, scrap from dinner, finding a spot in their yard,
digging a hole,
dig it down and
yep,
pop it
exactly.
in, and slowly do that over your entire yard.
Yep, and it is amazing. I've seen people do that before. It is absolutely amazing the difference it makes.
Wow.
Absolutely amazing. So.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about food forest.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
You know, every time you play that, I want to start dancing, but
oh,
I realize
too.
I shouldn't be doing that.
Oh, why not? Let's dance. Well, not you and me, but...
It's radio. Okay. Nobody will know.
Yeah, you should have seen his face there.
Well, let's see. What were we talking about?
Well, you mentioned food forest.
Oh, yes, food forest. We're going to talk about food forest, and that's an exciting concept that Greg is really interested in, and he's spreading this whole idea of food forest. But
around the urban farm.
Around
actually.
The urban farm.
Yeah.
There you go. See?
Well, and before we get into that,
yeah.
I just want to touch a little bit on what the urban farm is.
Right.
You know, are you a full-time farmer supplying food throughout the region and out the world?
People in outer space?
Yeah. Are you working somewhere else and this is just a passion you do in your spare time? How big is this place? What's going on?
What is it?
Yeah. What is the urban farm?
Perfect. The urban farm's my home. It's on a third of an acre, so a third of an acre is about 80 feet wide and about 160 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not a big property. It is a flood-irrigated property. So for those of you that don't know what that is, about 19, 20 times a year, I get 6 inches of canal water in my yard. So that waters the fruit trees for me. I like to call the urban farm a showcase home. Okay, I showcase food foresting. I showcase growing food, edible landscapes. I have 3 different kinds of solar on the roof. I do rainwater and graywater harvesting. I've done a lot of building on the property using reclaimed materials And, you know, I just, what I do is I really emulate a green lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And a big piece of my green lifestyle is growing food. So, and then the urban farm is as my profession. It's a hobby, although, in fact, here's one of my little books here. I brought one for you.
All right.
Oh, wow.
It's that's the story of how the urban farm came to be. And this is a project that has gone on for, well, in my head for probably 40 years. I know I don't look that old, but in the ground, it's been the urban farm for about 10 years, and I've lived there for 22. And I like to show it off. You know, I open it up for tours and classes. The urban farm is spreading throughout the neighborhood. My neighbors love what I do. And so it's really a place to spark and ignite people's interest around this whole notion of where does our food and power come from?
Well, it's funny you mentioned power as well, and some of the things we talked about, how, hey, these can, you know, having your own garden can be a catalyst, and you really start to pay attention more. And it's something I've found in all the projects we do. You know, we build a new house or a new space for somebody, and all of a sudden we give them a solar water heater.
Yeah.
Or they get they've got an inverter, and now they're getting, you know,
their own electricity from the sun.
Exactly. We've got photovoltaic panels on there, and all of a sudden everything changes.
Yes.
People monitor. They start, oh, how hot's my water right now?
Right.
And they start getting curious, and they look, and they start just changing how they go about their day in their habits, because they can really see right then and there what they're using and how they're using it. And I think this all translates into food and gardening as well.
I cannot tell you how important what you just said is, because it's really about raising our consciousness. Okay? You know, people raise their consciousness around this stuff. My electric bill last year at the urban farm, for the whole year, 2,000 square foot house, mm-hmm. there's two of us living there, was $458.
Wow.
For the year.
For the year. That
for
is
the year.
Fantastic.
Now, there's solar panels on the roof, mm-hmm. but the other piece of it, and the extremely significant piece, is we pay attention. When we leave the house, there isn't anything plugged in and running except the refrigerator.
Yeah. I mean, conservation, it's the first and foremost
That's right.
way to save.
That's right. I have a friend, same friend. We put the garden up near Desert Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
When I met her 3 years ago, her electric bill was $319 a month. And through having conversations over the course of a year, she dropped it down to $228 a month. That's, you know, the equalizer plan, so that's every month. She didn't spend any money. She just rethought how she was using her electricity.
And that's a great
That's
point.
Significant. That's almost $1,000 a year. That hits our pocketbook right there.
Well, so speaking of pocketbooks, uh-huh. you know, it's when you grow your own, getting back to the farming.
Concept, there you go, yeah.
Sorry to bring you back to that.
That's all right. I can talk about it all day.
You're saving money,
yeah,
you know, when
exactly.
you grow your own.
Exactly.
And you hinted a little bit about that, about the cost of transportation, because you're paying for that through taxes.
Well, through taxes and through the price of food. Have
and
you
the
seen
price
the price of
food.
Zucchini lately? It's crazy. Anyway,
so we know the prices are going up.
Yeah.
And you never know, like Eric was talking about contamination. But let's get back to
the food
forest.
Okay, the notion of food forest.
The notion of food forest.
It's, you know, really what we're doing is we're re-landscaping our spaces. And when I say spaces, I don't mean just our yards. I look to see how far past my yard I can put it. Okay. Median, schools, churches, where's the food infrastructure at, and where can I put food infrastructure? I'm working on a new project now where we're planting orchards in Phoenix. So any church or school that has a flood irrigated property, I want to get fruit trees planted on there, growing. So the notion of food foresting is we take your entire space where you're at and make a forest out of it of food. So we have stuff that grows low to the ground. We have shrubs. We have bushes. We have small trees. And we're, you know, they're symbiotically working together.
So, Greg, what I pick up from this is that you're creating this, like you said, infrastructure, a key word.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take a person, say a person has an acre property.
Yeah.
Like one of my clients has acre property.
Right.
Like to convert it into, say, a food forest.
Right.
And the food forest is not strictly just for food. In other words, you could actually create it as a garden
yep.
where you can have sitting area underneath.
Yep.
You can have a patio and
it's
all of this.
It's got to be nice looking. It's got to be
nice looking,
a comfortable place.
Comfortable
to be.
Place.
Absolutely.
Great shade. during the summer.
Yep.
And then you use some of the trees are deciduous, right?
Where
exactly. Maybe they shed and you get winter sun.
Yep.
So it could be a beautiful environment. This forest could be a great environment.
Right, exactly. And it's really a holistic way of looking at it. You got to look at all the pieces. You know, we as human beings design systems that there's an in and an out and an end.
Right.
And look at landscapes. Next time you're driving down the road, look at how many trees they put on hills.
Right.
Okay. The water doesn't stay on a hill. It runs off the hill. And then when a wind comes through in the summertime, okay, the trees fall over.
Right.
Okay? So from a holistic perspective, we want to put those in a basin.
Right.
That becomes a water collection point. Okay. So really what you're doing, and I teach a 10-week boot camp on this, really what you're doing is you're looking at your whole system. Okay. You're looking at all the pieces. And, you mentioned it's not just food. I have lots of flowers. First of all, my girlfriend loves flowers, cut flowers out of the yard.
Lucky girl.
Thank you. and what we do with that is it brings in pollinators. Okay? I don't have a problem with things
point.
Not get. That's right. It's honoring. It's looking at and honoring the whole system. And in nature, in a natural system, there's.
They're workers. They're workers.
Right.
There's workers underneath the ground.
That's
there's
right.
workers in the air.
Yep.
And the wind itself is a worker.
Absolutely.
And so really.
In fact, we should talk about that.
We're harnessing all these workers
yes.
and all these friends that at different levels and different sizes and
yep.
scales
yep.
and abilities
yes.
and brain power.
Yeah.
You know, a little insect has got a little brain power
yep.
and the worms and
the plants growing.
And the plants growing
yep.
and they talk to each other. Well, I don't want to get into that one. But but anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Yeah, that's right. We're looking at all of the different parts and working with nature to have them work together.
Now,
right.
when I kind of look at all this stuff, you know, I'm an architect, I'm a contractor,
uh-huh.
I want to build stuff and
uh-huh.
go out and
Good.
Put it together and make
right.
it look cool. And I've got my garden now, I'm just getting started, and I see Frank all the time telling me about permaculture and things we're doing. So last week, we planted in our front yard there's no irrigation. Well, there's a little irrigation where we happen to have a desert tortoise.
Right.
But we planted a jojoba bush because
yep.
we wanted to get something where we could get some nuts and we could
Perfect.
Eat it. And in areas where, you know, there's a lot of areas in Phoenix where you don't have flood and irrigation.
Right. right.
Or maybe you've got a plant list, or maybe not even a plant list from your HOA, but you're told, hey, we need to blend into that natural desert environment.
Right. Exactly.
What types of plants can people
gosh.
In those situations start to
well,
use?
Well, you have to look at the list, for starters, and see mm-hmm. how restrictive it is. I'd make sure that if I was stepping into and buying in an HOA, I'd make sure that there was things on that list that I would, you know, that you could use.
If we look at it from more of, hey, we're not an HOA, but we're just trying to sort of blend in with the desert, and
right.
we'll
oh my gosh. So
we'll
many
play
ways.
With it a little
yep,
bit.
Absolutely. You know, prickly pears. You can eat the pads. Those are called nopalitos. And you can eat the prickly pears. I love prickly pears. Mesquite beans are edible.
And you can make mesquite flour.
And you make mesquite flour.
Oh,
in
yeah.
fact, the Valley
you can
Perma-
buy it. You
That's
can go
right.
buy it.
That's right. The Valley Permaculture Alliance has a...
grinder, wasn't it?
Right. They have a milling
every
fall where you can collect your beans, dry them, and then take them to the milling and you get...
That's
you know, you get,
very cool.
Yeah, you get flour. Palo Verde beans are edible. They're like edamame. Ironwood beans are edible. In fact, I have a book. Oh, I'm going to have to see if I can think of it. It's a book on desert edibles of mm-hmm. the Southwest, and it's got to be 200 pages.
Wow.
So there's lots to eat in our desert landscape out there that we just need to pay attention to.
And I think that's the biggest thing is learning about it, paying attention
right.
to it, and then just trying it. Because once you try it, it's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, and prickly pear juice is just outrageously good and, mm-hmm. you know. Mesquite flour is like, oh my gosh, and high in protein and, you know, really great
yes,
stuff.
Yes, you know, I'm a vegetarian, and a lot of people say, well, you can't get your protein from vegetables. But you just said that you can,
yeah.
you know, you can get this protein that you need and live a great life just, you know, on a vegetarian diet.
Yeah.
Doesn't suit everybody, but
right.
we understand that
yeah.
part. So the food forest, back to that.
Yep.
So you're thinking of being able to have this throughout the different communities, the different levels, schools.
Yeah. Schools.
Schools.
Churches.
Churches.
You know, the faith-based community. I'm really reaching out to them now. They're very y'all are very interested in, you know, growing food infrastructure, and any opportunity I get to go out and speak with the faith-based communities, I love doing that.
Now, does this mean you're available for some lectures?
I am,
be able
absolutely.
To talk about this?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
All they need to do is contact you.
Greg@urbanfarm.org.
Yeah. Okay.
Just go to urbanfarm.org.
And the next thing we want to talk about when we come back from our break is how we can take condos, apartment complexes, and places, and maybe even government offices, and convert them into
yeah,
part
perfect.
Of the infrastructure.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerham Baum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to the Green Roundtable, which is a part of Breakthrough Thinking. And we have as our guests here today, Greg Peterson and our co-host, Eric Koss.
Here we are. We're back for the final segment.
Final round.
You know, it always goes so fast when we start talking about all this great food,
great
growing stuff. You know, I love it.
You know, if we're going to talk about all this food, we need to bring some food in.
I think
that's how we need to concentrate new guests, Frank.
Guests
that can bring food in.
There you go. You had a question for me about flood irrigation.
Yeah, and it's something, there's a lot of people out there that don't have access to flood irrigation. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, may think it's wasteful in some sense. You know, we're here in the desert, all this evaporation, and maybe there's a lot of plants you can grow because you have flood irrigation that maybe or maybe not would or would not be possible if you didn't have it.
There's absolutely truth to all of that. Here's the deal. There are 20,000 acres of flood irrigated properties in the Metro Phoenix area. 20,000 acres. Mm-hmm. You know what they grow?
Grass.
Exactly. And grass in the United States, grass is the crop that we spend the most money on.
And it's very invasive.
And it's very invasive.
Grass is an invasive plant.
Yeah,
right?
It's kind of scary when you think about it in those terms.
Exactly. So what I do with the urban farm is I provide those people with flood irrigation an alternative. Okay? I actually have near 4th Avenue in Bethany Home, I have a fruit orchard that I planted and a friend of mine's flood irrigated property. So I'm taking advantage of that. So for those people that have flood irrigation, there's a lot of things that you can do. For those people that don't have flood irrigation, there's actually models at the urban farm for rainwater and graywater harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm starting to convert the urban farm to a place where it doesn't matter where we get flood irrigation or not. Okay, and with graywater and rainwater, and graywater is any water that goes down any sink of your house, with the exception of your kitchen sink or your toilet. And that water is legal to use in your landscape. So what I encourage people to do is plant their gray water and rainwater in the ground and then plant around that. So there are strategies that we can use to build water retention into our soils and get our plants watered without flood irrigation. It's a little bit different game, but we can do it. Absolutely, without a doubt. And I know you've worked on some of those, Frank.
Right, and I'm doing working on one right now, and maybe we can cooperate on
absolutely.
Some of these.
You bet.
Let's talk about how we can take an apartment complex or a condo or a multi-story structure, and how can somebody who owns one of those or wants to convert it can get into this activity, into this movement.
Okay, are we talking from we haven't developed it yet, and we're going to develop it, or
let's talk about one that's there now.
An existing one,
an
absolutely.
Existing one.
Here's what it takes. It takes one person with a spark, because if somebody isn't there to manage it, then it goes away. Whatever gardens you put in, it goes away.
Right.
A friend of mine used to have a townhouse out in Tempe. And it had some nice garden beds, both in her backyard, with her little, townhouse is with a backyard that's 10 by 15, right?
Right.
And then, which she converted her backyard to growing food. But then she also stepped out into the beds of the apartment or the condo complex that she lived in.
Oh.
And was actually, she took out some half-dead oleanders, and she was growing a nice garden in that space. So
nice.
Really, it's about getting creative and looking to see what you have. I've had some complexes come to me, and they have the retention areas that the business complexes and apartment complexes have to put in. Those are water retention area. So when it rains, that's where the water goes. Plant your fruit trees there. That's an easy one.
Okay? That is easy.
That's an easy one. Now it's going to require some supplemental watering if you're using fruit trees here in the desert, but that's an easy one because that's where the water goes.
So, in other words, if there's a development that has maybe 100 or 200 units,
yes.
It's possible to create a community garden for that particular development and where people can share, and maybe even they can get some food if they take care of part of it, too.
Absolutely, we can do that. And, again, what it takes one person with a spark, one person to carry the torch to make sure that it moves forward. And once we have that one person, then it's easy.
Now, what about the idea of maybe on a multi-story building?
Uh-huh.
I've seen where they have gardens hanging out the window of the multi-story building, but I wondered about that, how that works.
Well, here's the thing. Again, if you're on the west side or the north side, that's kind of hard. Okay? If you have a patio that gets afternoon sun or gets no sun on the north side, it's really hard. But balconies on the south side and the east side, those are ripe.
Yes, they're ripe.
They're ripe for a place to plant a garden. So, it's really the same concepts, just a different, you're stacking houses rather than spreading them out.
Now, we've been talking about food, but a lot of these principles apply actually to landscaping.
Absolutely.
In other words, you can have a better looking landscape if you apply these principles
Absolutely. Right? The biggest piece is don't put things on hills.
Don't put
it drives me nuts. Put little water retention basins.
I know, there's a Chinese proverb about that.
Is there?
Man who live on hill, not on level.
Oh, yes. Exactly. Exactly.
So anyway, a little
the
corny,
jokes just keep on coming
there
here.
Boom, boom.
But anyway, you're right. The idea of putting trees on the hill because all the water gets away from them, for
exactly.
that matter.
Exactly.
Unless.
Yeah. And Greg, I want to apologize. I'm sorry I have to provide your own sound effects here on our show today.
But what about gabions?
There we go. Ba-doom, boom. Gabions. I love gabions. The gabions.
What is a gabion?
Gabions, basically, it's an in-place dam.
Yes.
But you have to have a big enough property with water running across it. Really, in the notion of water harvesting, and this took me years to get, because I did my first permaculture design course in 1991, and they talked about water harvesting. And for me, that was, oh, my gosh, I got to catch the water, put it in a tank, and hold it for later. Right?
Right.
That's the expensive way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The inexpensive way to do it is to slow the water down on your property and get it sinking in. Okay. And swales, it's like a ditch that catches water, or gabions, which is a little dam,
essentially.
Small
dam, yeah.
Exactly. That slows the water down and keeps it on your property. Okay? And that's really what we're trying to do.
And why do we want to keep it on the property?
Well, you want to keep it on the property to get it in the soil,
uh-huh.
to water our native plants that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, and the offshoot of that is, hey, if it's staying on our property, it's not ruining something in our neighbor's yard.
Exactly.
It's not going into the flood system of the city where it's got to be processed and
right.
It's bringing chemicals or things off the road, washed yep. in, all down the line. So, again, it goes back to that whole process we talked about before.
That's right, the holistic process.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Brad? So 1 acre of property, one acre will collect about 27,000 gallons of water per inch of rain.
Okay, perfect.
So, and then maybe a mesquite tree or something like that will take about 2,900 to 3,500 gallons. It depends.
Right, exactly.
Per tree. Uh-huh. So you can see just by the math that you could be watering your trees.
Exactly.
Through rainwater.
Yes, exactly.
And maybe you have a drip irrigation system for backup.
Right.
Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, in fact, my friend Brad Lancaster from Tucson yes. has written the books yeah. on rainwater harvesting, right? He said our modern day rivers are our streets because we get the water running off the property. Okay, my parents recently bought a place up in Prescott. About 5 years ago, they bought a house up in Prescott. And all of the gutters are connected to pipes that take the water to the street.
Okay. Yes.
The small streets get to bigger streets and get to bigger streets. I remember in the 70s, some of the floods that we had here, we had canoes in the streets because there was so much water.
So and they keep on doing that, and the streets don't grow. You
right.
know,
yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, we've got a project now where we're covering everything in solar. We've got a couple of actually 25,000 gallon underground water storage tanks.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
We're doing some things the hard way because we can on this project. And we can actually use this water for drinking water in the house.
Perfect.
And we're trying to really do some interesting things here. And part of it is because, again, as I'm coming at it from an architect's perspective, this idea of, hey, you know, buildings waste all this energy or use all this energy.
So if we can slowly start
to make it where individual buildings can be self-contained, and that's kind of this dream, I think, and this goal of all architects.
Exactly.
When you sit back and you think about, you know, hey, you've got this urban farm, you've got this spark, you've started it, and when you just think back, gosh, what would I like to see happen, or what's my goal, or what's my dream for before we go here in the Phoenix area or any urban area, what's your kind of final thought or hope and dream on all that?
10,000 urban farms in Phoenix. And then let's spread it farther. Because if we start growing our food here in the valley, growing food for us here, we're a lot more secure. Okay, we're a lot happier with the food. You know, the environmental impact is a lot less. You know, so on and so on.
And it also becomes a backup in case there's unforeseen situations.
Yeah, exactly.
That we have a scarcity of whatever.
Right.
So we have something that we can. Right in our backyards that we can depend on.
Exactly. So the planting calendar is available on urbanfarm.org. If you just go there, you can download the planting calendar. And I got some videos and my blogs there. And we mentioned the word permaculture a couple times, the Valley Permaculture Alliance. If you just type into Google Phoenix and permaculture, they'll come up first. And they offer lots of great classes. And there's a lot of education for this out there.
So, Greg, give us again your email and possibly your sites that people can access.
Perfect. So I'm available for speaking gigs, for writing. I'm a writer. I write for Edible Phoenix Magazine. I offer classes. I have this boot camp that I offer on how to create your own urban farm. And you can find information about all that at urbanfarm.org. If you want to shoot me an email, I'm greg@urbanfarm.org.
Thank you.
Love to chat.
And it'd be fantastic. And Eric, tell us about for you.
You can always reach me online at kossdb.com. That's kossdb.com. And if you ever need to get a hold of us, we're at 602-374-5757.
Fantastic. And one of the things that I think we ought to do is maybe, we've got the people that we're going to produce some videos in the future. So we let them know that we're going to have some videos. They'll talk all about this.
All about how to make your own food for us.
And what about those little things? What do we call them that we forgot to mention them?
Oh, the Vermisox.
The Vermisox,
my gosh. If you're curious about that, it's Vermisox, VermaSOKS.com. Go visit their site. That is a absolutely magical company, and what he's doing is amazing.
Yes.
And that's sort of started locally here in Phoenix as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's a friend of mine, and basically, real quickly, he's taking food waste, making it into a liquid, feeding it to worms, growing food, and selling the food back to the places where he got the food waste from. It's just like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Fantastic. Well, I think we've got it all solved. We have the food problems all solved.
I love that. And go start your own urban farm. Remember, grow food, share it, name your farm. That's
Name your farm because that's what does it. And you connect with it and you relate to nature.
Nature, exactly. Less of an environmental impact. Just, you know, have fun growing food.
Thank you very much for listening
to
the Green Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Greg. Appreciate it very much.